But I'm afraid that's the way it is. So we're here to help. Okay, we have not given up on anybody. Even those raving atheists that write all kinds of nasty things about me, hey, we love you, we want to help you, get drawn to Christ, okay? It's not too late. It will be one of these days when you quit breathing, then it's too late, okay? But as long as you're breathing, there is hope. So, if you want to call in, you can be on the program, 850-479-3466, 850-479-3466, and go to extension 136. So once again, 850-479-3466, extension 136. Or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. Now, we have several instant messages from the last time. From yesterday, I didn't quite get to finish. I'm sorry. We try to get everybody's question answered here. So if you believe evolution, or you believe there's a problem in the Bible, or you believe that we're wrong, let us know. Give us a chance to defend ourselves. You know, this is America, the land of the free and the home of the slave. So we will be glad to defend our position. And if we can't, we will change. Promise. Guaranteed.
And we've also got an access point for everyone on the Internet who wants to send in their questions, comments, criticisms, or love notes, anything like that. They can contact us right now on AOL Instant Messenger under the screen name Dr. Dino Live. That's DrDinoLive, Dr. Dino Live. Any questions or anything like that for Dr. Hovind here?
All right. Let's read a few articles, and then we'll take your instant messages, questions here. Here we go. This is from Live Science staff writer, who writes, "Rare but real," is the headline of the article, "people who feel, taste, and hear color." Wow. Where did you come up with this, Jonathan?
I believe that's from LiveScience.com,
yeah. When Ingrid Carey says she feels colors, she does not mean she sees red or feels blue or is green with envy. She really does feel them. She can also taste them and hear them and smell them.
Hmm.
You know, I mentioned this in my seminar part two, that, you know, we have five senses. And what if God expanded them when we get to heaven, where you could actually, you know, smell, taste, or feel the colors, or you could see the sounds?
Or if people can do that now, I mean, what will we be able to do in heaven? You know, what could God do even more greater than that?
Interesting. It says the 20-year-old junior at the University of Maine has synesthesia, some kind of a rare neurological condition in which two or more of the senses entwine. Numbers and letters, sensations and emotions, days and months are all associated with colors for Carey. The letter N is Sina Brown, S-I-E-N-N-A. You ever heard of that color, Sina Brown?
No.
J is light green. The number 8 is orange, and July is bluish green. The pain from a shin splint throbs in hues of orange and yellow, purple and red, Carey told Live Science. Colors in Carey's world have properties that most of us would never dream of. Red is solid, powerful and consistent, while yellow is pliable, brilliant and intense. Chocolate is purple, is rich purple, and makes Carey's breath smell dark blue.
I wonder what that would be like, you know, if she can feel like the pain of a shin split by the color orange or something like that, you know, just what it's like to look at a, you know, for instance, this bookcase right here, they got 150 million different varieties of colors on there.
Right.
I wonder what that would be like.
What if you could smell them, colors, or, you know, sense them. Cool. Eric, you got
pretty
old. There's a girl who can do that. Eric?
Yeah.
A long walk home with a broken leg, son. Here you go. A girl who can feel, taste, and smell the colors. We've been saying for years that that'll be cool if God did that in heaven. All right, another article. CNN, CommunistNewsNetwork.com, says mutant mice helping cure diseases from San Francisco. Since researchers published the mouse's entire genetic makeup in map form 3 years ago, increasingly exotic rodents are being created with relative ease. There's the Schwarzenegger mouse. Ooh. Injected with muscle-building genes. The marathon mouse, which never seems to tire. Researchers recently engineered some mice to be extremely addicted to nicotine and others to be immune to a close cousin of the brain-wasting mad cow disease. And scientists are in hot pursuit of a Methuselah mouse, able to cheat death long after its natural brethren meet their maker. Well, I thought they already had that. What was that cartoon, or the enough cartoon, the movie, The Green Mile? Did you see that with Tom Hanks?
Yeah, and the really, really big black dude that
yeah
took everyone's sicknesses and stuff.
Well, they had that mouse, remember, that lived a long, 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 long time? The Methuselah mouse, that was it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there was a mouse in the movie that they tried to kill and couldn't kill.
Okay, and the I guess the short skittish prisoner kind of kept him as a friend or something.
Right.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
And the one bad guy killed him, and then the big black guy brought him back to life by sucking all the flies out of him.
Yep.
A little far fetched, some of the stuff, but it was
pretty wild. Made for a good movie. I mean,
yeah, it was a good movie. Yeah. The Green Mile. Okay. Who cares? Here we go. Anyway, so they're looking for a Methuselah mouse, mutant mouse. I have wondered, Jonathan, if before the flood, people living 900 years, learning an awful lot, probably much, much smarter than we are today, were doing genetic manipulations like this, and I mean, and really got some bizarre results, and God said, that's it, I'm stopping the whole thing, I'm sending a flood. I've wondered if that was one of the reasons. You know, it says there were giants in the earth in those days. Maybe the Genesis 6 is actually genetic gene pool manipulation. Don't know. Couldn't prove it. Don't quote me on that, but it just sounds like an interesting possibility. I'm not against genetic research, but I think it's certainly possible to create something for which you have now a problem in that you cannot control it, or there's no antidote for something you create, some kind of disease you create.
Just think, if mice were living forever, how quickly the mice would take over rabbits or something.
Sure.
No, we'd have a huge rabbit problem on our hands.
We would. Or mice.
Yeah, or mice.
Well, there's a couple little bulges in our snake up there.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two mice. If you feel down the snake's back.
The big one?
No, the little one. You can feel a couple bulges in his belly.
The small python? Because we have
three,
actually. We got one that's like, how long is that?
Oh, the little corn. The 7-foot snake up there is, you can't tell when it is a mouse. Not even a bump.
The little corn snake is gone.
Corn snake's gone?
It's out again.
Oh, got out of the cage.
It's just a little.
Yeah, they'll find it. I mean, it's not a big deal. I like it when Ashley found the other one. In her printer?
It was in the printer.
She thought the printer, her printer was jammed. She went to print a paper and it wouldn't come out of her printer, so she pulled the drawer out and reached behind it to get the paper, and there was the python, the little 2-foot, 3-foot python.
Oh, well, that one right there was in our office the other day. Heath and I had gone upstairs, and he was going to unplug his Cat5 cable, the network cable, to hook up his laptop to the network, and he reached down by our little hub down there, and right on top of the hub was that second longest python coiled up, laying on top of the hub.
Trying to get one.
Yeah. So he had dust on his head. Looks like he'd been sitting there for quite a while, too. So.
Huh. For those listening out there, we have 3 or 4 snakes in our science center.
We have a science center for those listening out there. We have a whole park.
We have a whole park.
Yeah.
Dinosaur Adventureland with an amazing science center.
Uh-huh.
And theme park and creation museum. This is unbelievable. I'm getting better all the time.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so instant messages here. Dr. Dino Live, AOL instant message, Dr. Dino Live. And we'll get talking about the snake. How did we get off on that? Oh, the mouse that lives forever.
Mm-hmm.
Green Mile. Okay, here we go. Redefining defining planet. This is MSNBC.com. Newfound world focus forces action. Wait a minute. They just found another planet and it forces action. Now they got to do something about it? We're not doing anything about the other ones.
We haven't done anything about this one for a long time, too.
I mean, what are we doing about Mars? We've got to do something, John. What are we going to do about Mars? I mean, come on.
We've got to find water on it. I mean, we've got to figure out where we came from.
How about leave it alone? It's doing fine. We don't need us to do anything about it. Here we go. This one from space.com.
McDonald's wants to,
open
populate it.
Open a McDonald's. Robert Roy Britt writes in. The claim Friday that a 10th planet has been discovered in our solar system has set off a fresh round of debate and international talks, I'm going to insert my comments here, paid for by the taxpayers, end quote, aimed at defining the most vexing term in astronomy, the word planet. Not a vexing term. The word planet means wanderer. That's why they chose the word planet. A formal proposal could come within a week or two, but some astronomers see no easy resolution. Now, the guy who stirred the latest dust is trying to snuff the whole debate by repositioning planet as a cultural term that no longer has any scientific meaning. Scientists have, for the most part, not yet realized that the term planet no longer belongs to them, says Caltech's Mike Brown, who led the discovery of the new larger-than-Pluto object. Brown's new view comes after contemplating 6 years of mostly fruitless scientific arguments that began when the public became outraged over a rumor that scientists plan to demote Pluto. a rumor rooted in the fact that some astronomers had already stopped calling Pluto a planet by the late 1990s. I finally realized the mistake we astronomers have been making all along, Brown told Space.com. The word planet is simply not a scientific word. It's a cultural word. Once you get over the trap, the rest becomes easy. The problem. At the heart of the problem is a small world that should never have been called the ninth planet when it was found 75 years ago. Pluto is small. Its orbit very non-circular. It travels 17 degrees outside the main plane of the solar system. They're discriminating. This is discrimination. Just because it doesn't follow the path of everybody else, okay? Here we go. In recent years, several other round worlds, at least half as big as Pluto, have been found on similar offbeat paths, including two announced last week, in addition to 2003 UB313, whose orbit is inclined to whopping 45 degrees. Most astronomers view all of them, Pluto included, as members of our Kuiper belt. Other terms are used, too, to describe the increasingly complex outer solar system. So, found another planet. And, of course, there's going to be a multi-million-dollar discussion that we pay for on whether we should call it a planet. Oh, interesting. If they find 20 of them, I don't care.
Here's a layman's question, I guess. I was just thinking about this. In all these diagrams I see of our solar system and so forth, all these planets are orbiting around on kind of like a 2D plane. There's nothing like going...
That's what they're saying about Pluto is 17 degrees out, and the other one's 45 degrees out of the plane.
So they actually... But these things are all kind of rotating around an east-west type of thing, just a horizontal rotation.
Right.
Like orbit. I mean, if the big... Where's all the stuff going up and down?
You mean if the Big Bang were true?
I don't know. Well, I know we're not the center of the Big Bang or whatever, but, I mean, shouldn't there still be... How come everything's so on a horizontal plane?
Right. Interesting. Well, we do have, you know, comets and asteroids that come flying through that are not, you know, in that plane. You never know which way they're going to come from.
I don't know. I'm not an astronomer, so there's some easy question or easy answer out there.
We had an astronomer calling in here for a while.
We did?
I was thinking we did.
Might have had a pseudo-astronomer. I don't know.
Oh.
A guy who read I Can Read About Stars or something.
Yeah, he read the book when he was in second grade about stars. And yeah, that's right. Okay, a couple more here, and we'll take your questions. Instant message us at Dr. Dino Live. MSNBC, again, they have an article. Life's ingredients found in early universe. Infrared telescope detects signature of complex hydrocarbons. The stuff of burnt toast, auto emissions, and life itself has been spotted in galaxies so far away, they are seen at a time when our universe was just one-fourth of its current age. That is stupid.
So complex hydrocarbons have not evolved for, you know, billions of years.
The obvious assumption in a statement like that is that star is a bazillion light years away, so it took a bazillion years for the light to get here.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get it. It's not necessarily true. Let's see. I covered that in video 7. The discovery of organic molecules called hydrocarbon shows that the raw materials for life were present long before our solar system formed. Scientists do not know how life made the jump from organic material to biological material. Let me insert Hovind's comments here. So send more money so we can do more research. Right? That's the sense.
Well, they don't know how it did it, but they're definitely sure that it did happen.
They know it did it. They're just not sure how. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no question a creator didn't do it. I mean, that they're sure of. Okay. That's not even going to come into their mind at MSNBC here. The galaxies are 10 billion light years away, the article says, so they are seen as they existed 10 billion years ago. Wrong. Earth is 4.5 billion years old. Wrong. And the universe has been around about 14 billion years. Hugh Ross said it was 17.42 or something.
Was it?
He had it right down to the week, you know, when it was created. I said, Hugh, I don't know about that. I think you're making up a story here. Anyway, life's ingredients. We have life's ingredients all over around sitting on the table here. I mean, here I got water. That's one of life's ingredients, right? You know, all kinds of life's ingredients. Doesn't prove you can make life from non-life. Okay, who's on the phone there, John?
Oh, we got Eric on the phone.
Yes, sir. I got a bunch of Erics calling in here. Which one is this?
This is Minnesota.
Minnesota, Eric.
Yep.
How are you doing, Eric?
Oh, you know how it is.
I do know how it is, and that's why I'm worried about you. I mean, anybody without the Lord leading their life, it's got to be lonely and boring, you know?
not really.
No? Okay.
I enjoy life.
Oh, me too, but go ahead.
But, you know, you probably don't want to talk about anything but, let's say, religion or evolution on your show, but...
Well, hold on. Evolution is religion, but go ahead.
So when you bring in certain statements like, you know, food stamps, you know, I think it's right to call and object to it. You know, yesterday you said something about people would never find their food stamps under their working boots, right?
I said, yeah, some people would starve to death if you hid their food stamps under their work boots. That is correct. Yeah, they don't want to. Not everybody, but there are some who don't want to work. Doesn't matter. Would not matter. They don't. They like. It's much easier to not work and go make us pay their bills.
All right. At least I got you to admit that, Ken.
But, I'm not, you
have to admit that was the most terrible thing. I mean, you've insulted Muslims and all scientists, and now you went after the poor.
Do you agree that he said some people?
Yes.
Okay, do you think some people milk the government nipple?
But you did not say some yesterday. You intended that for all people on food stamps.
Okay, well, the Bible has a pretty clear welfare program. In 1 Thessalonians 4:11, I believe, if any will not work, neither shall he eat.
I guess I can be thankful. You know, my mother, she has crippling disease, can't work or anything like that. She was a mother, a single parent, and actually grew up on the welfare system. And, I mean, it really got us by. But there are, you know, she was a genuine person who just could not work. She worked two jobs for most of her, you know, parenting life. But there are some people out there, and I can probably take you to 10, 15 houses in my old town, people who are just...
Oh, we're going to break
your
hair.
I'm excited about a new resource just made available to Truth Radio. A friend of Truth Radio has sent us a quantity of a booklet entitled Our American Common Law. If you've wondered what the difference is between common law, equity law, contract law, all these very important distinctions, and how the gold or money issue enters into this whole discussion, this booklet is for you, and we have enough copies, so I'm sure we can send you one. This is just under 30 pages, and it's yours entirely free of charge in return for your contribution of any size to Truth Radio. We need your support. Our address is Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. Ask for the booklet entitled Common Law.
Thomas Jefferson wrote in 1798... on this piece of paper I scotch taped here on the wall above my desk. 1798, after one of his own defeats, Thomas Jefferson wrote, "A little patience and we shall see the reign of witches pass over, their spells dissolve, and the people, recovering their true sight, restore the government to its true principles. If the game runs sometimes against us at home, we must have patience till luck turns, and then we shall have an opportunity of winning back the principles we have lost. For this is a game where principles are at stake," said Thomas Jefferson.
And that's the voice of Garrison Keillor, PrairieHome.org.
All right, welcome back, folks, to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hope and Jonathan Sampson live, August the 10th of 2005. You can join us at 850-479-DINO or 877-479-DINO, extension 136. After Eric gets off the phone, he's almost done. Or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, AOL instant message, DR, D-I-N-O-L-I-V-E. You can do that right now. Okay, Eric, you had called in objecting to my statement yesterday about hiding somebody's food stamps under their work boots and they would starve to death because you think the government food stamp program is fine or something to that effect.
Well, yes, it's a very important program, especially, you know, also like the soup kitchens. You know, it's important to have these things in such an advanced nation.
Well, are you saying then that this is socialism, obviously. Everybody should be required to pay for those who will not work, or should it be just those who cannot work?
Well, there are some people who can't work, some who don't. You know, it's not like you're living the life going on food stamps and soup kitchens. You know, even living on welfare, you're not exactly living a very good life. And that's why almost everyone does prefer the West.
Okay. I have, for 36 years that I've been a Christian, spoken dozens, possibly even over 100 times, at rescue missions and places like this, and I deal a lot with people. When I was at a church in California, I was in charge of helping the people who stopped off the street and saying, you know, please help me. I got to have money to go see Grandma in, you know, Illinois or something.
Yep. You explained the story where people didn't want to work.
Correct. We have people here in Pensacola that hold up little signs, you know, we'll work for food, you know, and they stand on the side with a sad look on their face and a little puppy beside them, and people stop and hand them money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We have lots of them down here because it's nice weather down here, okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. See them up in here in Minneapolis, too.
Sure.
And, yeah, actually, they're professional beggars. They can do that.
Okay, should I be forced and you be forced to pay 10% of your paycheck to feed them?
We're not, though. They're actually, it's a profession now. You have to get a license, and you have to stand out there. They're making income. They're not actually people who are
wait.
Getting our money.
Are you telling me in Minnesota, the people that stand on the street with a cardboard sign, will work for food, have to get a license?
I believe they passed some sort of bill where beggars do have to get some sort of license to stand on the street corner. I don't know.
That may be true. It sounds like some, you know, Jesse would do. But
Jesse isn't their governor.
I know. Yeah, he was. The idea, though, of socialism is that everybody is forced to pay for those who refuse to work.
Not really. I don't believe that.
That's the definition of socialism.
How old does it take Sweden? Are people working over there?
Why not?
Huh?
I didn't hear your first part of the sentence.
Well, Sweden is a socialist country, and so is Norway. I mean, are you just going to say that no one works over there?
Oh, no, certainly people work, but a huge percentage of what they earn from their labor is taken away by force
to pay for
those who will not work. Now, sometimes they cannot work.
It's not that you can't just label it as that, just paying people for not working. I mean, you know, when we had the Depression, people just lose jobs. It happens.
I said those who will not work. Now, it's true. There are those who cannot work. But see, let's take a look at the big picture here. Let's suppose there's a depression and people are starving. Okay, whose job is it to fix it? Is it the government's job or is it the church's job? As a socialist or a Democrat, you would say, "Oh, that's the government's job."
Well, yes, because not everyone's a Christian.
Even people who aren't Christians are taken care of by the churches. I mean, for years there was no welfare program in America, and if somebody was starving, the church would bring them 30 bags of groceries and some clothes for their kids and say, God bless you.
Direct teaching from Christ. I mean,
we're commanded to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know,
except the church doesn't know everyone. No one, you know, it's not a very efficient way to always do things.
But I don't know these people that I'm paying. Their, you know, if they force money out of my pocket to go to a general fund to pay for people, I don't know if they cannot work or will not work. I can't tell that.
Well, see, now what you're hinting at here is the general tax system in general that you have a beef with. And that's the way society works. People won't always want to have to pay, so we have to force it out of them. People are overall greedy and they want to keep their money, so we have the tax system.
So that the government can keep their money?
or redistributed programs that feed.
You need to read. You need to read a great little booklet that was published in 1849. I can reach it here, I think, and hold it in my hand. It's called The Law. It's by the Frenchman Frédéric Bastiat. It is a classic. You can go to the website I referred to this morning, John.
Constitution.org/law.
/law, and you can read the whole book right there. It's a very simple, quick read. It's like, 760 pages. He wrote, this is a classic, The Arguments Against Socialism. Okay, what you're referring to is called lawful plunder. There's unlawful plunder, where the thief comes, breaks into your house, and steals your stuff. Okay, then there's lawful plunder where the government steals your stuff because the law says they can't.
Steal? Come on, Kent. Even when this nation was founded, they still had taxes.
Oh, I'm not against taxes. I never have been.
Yes, you are.
Who told you that?
You did. You always bash taxes. In fact, you're doing it right now.
No.
You're calling it stealing and plundering and...
No, I am for the law. I think everybody should obey the law. I've never been against... I'm not a tax protester of any kind. I'm against lying and cheating and stealing, and I'm against the government being involved in things they have no business being involved in, going outside the Constitution. I mean, if everybody gets together and votes, hey, they have a right to do this, if the government should be into education, okay, if that's what people want. But the people have never voted for that. The Constitution clearly says, Article 10, the 10th Amendment, that the Constitution is limited, and if it's not spelled out in this document, the federal government has no jurisdiction. There should never be a federal welfare system unless they want to vote a constitutional amendment, which they haven't done.
Are there state welfare systems, though?
There are state welfare systems. There should not, but the federal government is heavily involved in this, and they should not be. Okay, anyway, a little off topic. Here's the point. If somebody will not work, they should not eat. That'll motivate them to go to work.
But not everyone can work or has the option to.
There you go. Now, there you're missing the point.
And some people, even if they work, still don't have enough to buy the food.
Okay, so suppose somebody works, this is the Little Red Hen. I don't know if you ever heard the Little Red Hen. I think it's one of Aesop's fables. I don't know. But the Little Red Hen found some wheat. Who will help me harvest the wheat? Nobody would. I said the cow, not I said the pig, not I said the duck.
Uh-huh. We all heard the...
Sure. They go through the whole story. The Little Red Hen, harvests the wheat, takes it to the mill, grinds the flour, bakes the bread, and then says, now who will help me eat the wheat? Oh, I will. I'll eat the bread. Of course everybody will help eat it, but they don't want to work to get it. If I work, I should be rewarded for my work. Somebody who will not work should not be rewarded for my work.
They're not exactly, rewarded. You kind of act like, these people are living immodestly. They're not. I mean, you look at the homeless people. The soup kitchens. Come on, Kent. They're not living modest lives.
Whose fault
is
it?
It's terrible. Well, yes, it's their fault, but, not every homeless person is mentally capable of doing things. Many people are just...
Okay, I would say 70 to 80% is the estimate of the problems like this are self-induced. They go drink, they take drugs, they blow their mind out on crack cocaine, and then they want me to pay their bills. I'm sorry, you shouldn't have taken the crack cocaine.
Well, are you just going to let them die then?
Well, I don't know.
They should at least give them the food, Kent. And that's what these stamps and...
You give them the food.
Everyone in this country deserves the right to eat, Kent.
Deserves.
Everyone.
Wait,
I don't care who you are.
Well,
everyone.
Think what you're saying, Eric. A right to eat.
Yes. Yes. No. And when you live in such a country as America, I don't care who you are. You deserve the right not to starve. It should be there in the Constitution.
The right not to starve.
Yes.
It is not a right. Okay? Not at all.
It should be.
You won't find any.
And I don't see how you can disagree with that.
Okay. You will not find any other species on this planet that works like that. I mean, if the rabbit doesn't go around and pick up the grass, nobody's going to bring the food to the rabbit. He's got to hop around and find his own, okay? Every species on the planet has to go get their own food. Everything has to work.
You can't use an analogy such as nature in this sequence. We're all in a civilization, a society, and especially in America, where everyone is rich. Everyone.
Everyone
should be able to eat and have food.
Right, I agree. There's no excuse for somebody not to be able to...
No, that's not true. Yeah.
Kind of break your chair. Folks, keep kind of a few moments.
I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Tyler. Hey, folks, join us in just a minute after the break. We'll be back.
People get married for intimacy, but before long, many couples find something different.
With Moments Together, here's Dennis Rainey.
Take Paul and Michelle, for instance. After 17 years together, they have what most would consider a model marriage. But over time, they've become alienated from one another because of an unsatisfying sex life. They can't discuss the subject anymore, and they've resisted seeking counsel. They've simply declared this area off limits for discussion. Most days, after taking care of the kids, Michelle is exhausted and uninspired. She feels guilty about not being the wife she knows she should be. Meanwhile, her husband Paul is frustrated and sometimes finds himself looking too long at some women at work. Most of the time, couples like Paul and Michelle will simply settle for something less than what God expects in that marriage. And for Christians, that simply shouldn't be an option.
Moments Together with Dennis Rainey is made possible by Regal Books, the Moments Together devotional series at Christian bookstores or regalbooks.com.
Arrogant enough to call Truth Radio the home of the truth, because the home of the truth is up there with the Lord in heaven. But www.truthradio.com is a reliable place to find information you won't find elsewhere. Stay tuned. Let me ask you, would you go to a fast food restaurant for filet mignon and lobster? Then, why do you bother going to a politician for a solution to your problems based upon morality? Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. I read that in a letter to the editor, and I think it was worth passing on. And I would like to challenge your thinking to spend less time pleading with your congresspeople and more time getting people, your friends and others, to listen to Truth Radio. We need to build the audience for Truth Radio, and you can help through your emails, a brief reference to Truth Radio, through your conversations with friends, handing out little cards with Truth Radio mentioned. We appreciate all the help you can give. Thank you for listening, and bring along others with you.
Hello, Ken Hovind here in Pensacola, Florida, talking to with Jonathan Sampson, talking to the whole world on the internet at drdino.com is our website, or truthradio.com is the program. You can call in and be on the program. We're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory being taught in our school is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. And who's our caller, Jonathan?
Well, we got my favorite caller now. You know, we talked about yesterday how a gentleman actually sent me a T-shirt, the Upside Down Darwin Fish Dead.
Yeah.
And how that's actually like a window opportunity for witnessing people. So this is Kel Burr on the phone with us. Just said he's going to send another shirt.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, it's cool.
Awesome. Yes, Kel, go ahead.
Hi, Ken. I'd like to encourage everyone. This is Kel Burr from Bellingham, Washington. I'd like to encourage everyone that's in the Seattle area to come to the Seattle Creation Conference, which starts tomorrow.
Awesome. Who else going to be
Saturday?
Who's going to be speaking there?
We're going to have Larry Bardeman, Mike Riddle,
awesome.
Michael Ord, Tom Hoyle, and should be a good time. Our website is nwcreation.net. You can find out more information there.
I was just on it today. I didn't know you worked on that site.
For North West, for Northwest Creation. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, good.
Well, that's newcreation.net, yes.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do for a living, how you got into all this.
I'm a graphic artist, and at one point in my life, I was wondering, you know, which worldview I should adhere to. And it occurred to me that if I figured out which worldview explained how we got here, that would be the right way to, that would be the right one to look into. And so that I started studying creation and evolution, and just got addicted to it. And I'm really annoyed that we only hear one side of the issue growing up in public school or if we turn on the Discovery Channel.
It is definitely sad. They're certainly not open-minded to anything other than their view, are they?
No, sir.
Yeah, well, good. So, graphic artist. Do you think does artwork evolve by itself, or does it require some kind of intelligent input?
I can tell you that design does not happen by chance. If it did, unfortunately, I would be out of work.
Awesome.
Now, actually, I have to ask you about, you know, we were just talking about earlier in this news article how scientists don't know about these big leaps that apparently happen. But if I'm not mistaken, you know, Kelly, you've taken some pretty big leaps. I could have sworn I'd seen a video of you jumping off the top of a bridge.
Yes, you have seen that.
Yeah, if this is the guy I'm thinking of, then I'm sure he's, you know, fearless like Dr. Hovind here. The thing that people really love about Dr. Hovind is he'll debate anybody, anywhere, anytime. And so, yeah, Gilbert, I know who you are now.
What'd you jump off a bridge for?
Bungee jumping. Yeah, it's quite an adrenaline rush.
You know, I've never tried it. We were driving through up near Gatlinburg, Tennessee, when my kids were, 14, 15, 16, right around there. My son Eric walking in right now. He said, oh, Dad, I want a bungee jump. I said, son, it's $25. He said, come on, I want to do it. I said, it's $25. He kept begging and begging, and you know how kids do. They finally win you over. And I said, okay, son, I'll tell you what. Here's what we'll do. I'll let you do it if you go head first time. He said, okay, and he did. He climbed up there and jumped off. My daughter got up there, suited up, and panicked. Said, I can't do this, Dad. So came back out. I've never done it. How far a jump was it?
Oh, I don't remember.
Jumping off a bridge.
They built a bridge specifically for bungee jumping, and it was over a stream, a small river. And so you have the option of them adjusting the tension on the bungee cord so that you could actually dip your head in the water.
That'd be too much for me. I'd be too scared. I'd do a 150-foot belly flop off the top of that bridge. I don't think I'd want to do that.
It's great fun.
Great. That would be an adrenaline rush. Yeah, okay. I used to get into adrenaline rushes. I think I've, at 52, decided, you know, I'd rather enjoy my grandkids. Well, good. So what, the Creation Conference in NWCreation.org.
NWCreation.net.
Or .net, okay.
Yes.
And it starts tomorrow.
Yes, starts tomorrow, runs through Saturday. And, again, the speakers are Danny Faulkner, Larry Vardaman, Mike Riddle, Michael Ord.
Well, I've met Michael Riddle many times. Great guy. You're going to enjoy him. I don't know that I've actually met any of the rest of them, other than I've read their stuff and loved it. You know, they write a lot of creation books.
Yeah. Larry Vardaman's actually involved in the RAPE project, which we've been talking about several times on here. And he'll be also doing a November conference over in California, I believe, on the RAPE project. And Danny Faulkner actually did a video with you on the commentary when you debated Hugh Ross. Danny Faulkner came down and actually sat down, and you guys kind of talked about the whole debate after that. And Michael Ord was with the National Weather Station for, I think, 30 years as a meteorologist.
On weather and astronomy.
He said that he's repented from that.
Yeah. Now, do you travel and speak also?
No, sir.
No? Well, I get about 20 to 50 requests a week. We need to get more people out there doing this. So give up that graphic artist stuff and find out. Jump in. All right. Well, good. We appreciate you calling in. Any other questions or comments, brother?
That's it.
All right. Hope your conference goes well. Tell those guys I said hi.
Well,
thanks a lot. All right, folks, you can join us on the program here, 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, extension 136. Or instant message us.
Yeah, Dr. Dino Live is our screen name, DRDINOLIVE, Dr. Dino Live on AOL Instant Messenger.
Okay, let's see. We have Bobbit Worm had written in. And I didn't get a chance to answer it, so let me do this one here real quick. Why do you guys only equate chance with random chance? chance incorporates random and non-random phenomena. The chance of flipping a head or tail is 50-50, i.e. random. One may ask, what is the chance of flipping a head? What is the chance of getting a head? In this context, chance equals random. However, if one asks, what is the chance of a dropped quarter hitting the ground, we are dealing with a non-random event, because not all outcomes have an equal probability of occurring, and chance does not equal random. Why do you guys not make this distinction when talking about the history of life and the universe? I don't know. I didn't see it as important.
I can see what he's saying, that some things we call chance but really aren't, like, you know, dropping a rock. What's the chance of this rock's going to hit the ground? Well,
it depends if you're over a building or over a river. You know, it's just a chance it may not hit the ground.
Yeah, well, what's the chance of the rock falling?
There are chances there.
You know, they can say chance, but we know it's going to fall. That's just the way physics works with these, you know, physical properties.
And they're going to come back and say, well, see, then the chance of life evolving from non-living material is inevitable. It's going to happen.
Yeah, but that's just completely ridiculous, because we know how physics deals with matter, and that's not necessarily the same. I mean, first of all, we can drop rocks all day long and see these things coming out true. You know, we can open up sardine cans all day long, which have a lot more proteins and DNA than any primordial soup, and no life is popping up in there.
By the way, it's interesting. Every canning company in the world counts on evolution not happening.
They do.
They count on it. It's not going to happen. I mean, when they can the green beans, you can open the thing 2 years later, and it's still green beans.
And it's more rich, vitaminally speaking, and, you know, DNA and all that stuff than any primordial soup could ever be.
But they absolutely rely on evolution not happening. Okay. So, I guess, I don't know if I answered the question, Bob at Worm, but don't think. Let's see, let me read it one more time, make sure I got it.
I guess you're just saying, therefore, some things that we call chance are inevitably going to happen, therefore, whatever I say is going to happen. That's ridiculous. They have to give a lot more evidence for that. I mean, for what he's claiming that can happen, the origin of life, and just attributing to something that we know happens. I mean, I could say, well, rocks always fall, therefore gnomes exist, and elves fly with reindeer. I mean,
True. That's
just like me saying rocks fall, therefore life can evolve. Come on.
Yeah, unrelated. All right. Bill Help 1 had written in, have you ever heard of Lloyd Anderson? Is he any good? Bill, I have heard of Lloyd Anderson. I have taken an airplane trip with him over the Little Grand Canyon of Mount St. Helens, the Toutle River.
Yeah.
Lloyd Anderson, I was looking up his website. Do you happen to know what that is, Jonathan?
Mount St. Helens. Is it Mount Blanco?
No, I cover this on video
7-6.
I thought
it was 7-something. I don't know. MSNBC did a whole series on him just recently, because he takes students, he takes them and actually takes them down into the Toutle River area. He takes them over to Mount St. Helens, and they on-site, you know, inspect things in situ. I mean, they will actually look at things right there in front of them, and he'll show them exactly how the flood explains it. Or not the flood, I'm sorry, but how catastrophic outcomes can come from something in just a short amount of time.
Here it is, Seven Wonders of Mount St. Helens by Lloyd Anderson. As a video he's put out. Their website is www.creationism.org/St. Helens, S-T, Helens. Creationism.org/St. Helens. Now, his phone number, if you want to call Lloyd Anderson, Bill, is he takes tours of Mount St. Helens showing, hey guys, it did not take millions of years to form these canyons. They happened very quickly. Take a look right here. We saw it happen. Don't tell me it took millions of years. I don't want to hear it. His phone number is 360-274-5737. That's 360-274-5737. That's the number I have from probably 2 years ago. I went on there were four of us. Lloyd and myself and two other guys rented a plane, a six-passenger plane, and a pilot came with it. Yeah, pretty expensive. And we flew around Mount St. Helens. And flew all over the, you know, the area, and took a zillion pictures of, you know, the Mount St. Helens canyons from the air. The textbooks will say it takes millions of years to form these layers and form the canyons. That is simply not correct. We have proof right in front of us that can happen very quickly with Mount St. Helens. I cover this on video 6 of our seminar series with all kinds of stuff about Mount St. Helens. and how the canyons were formed just incredibly rapidly. So hope that helps. Okay? Great. Who's on the phone there, John?
Well, we got Kurt calling from Tucson.
Tucson. Yes, Kurt. Go ahead.
You guys, how you doing?
Doing great.
Hey, I listen to it every so often here, and I don't have to listen to it before I find something I disagree with about what you're saying.
Well, no, that, you keep listening. We'll get you converted, and then you can agree with everything.
Well, this has nothing really to do with the topic of necessarily Christianity, but the
okay.
previous caller, Eric, talking about homeless people and all that.
Sure.
And I'm from Tucson. We got a lot of homeless people down here, too, big people
right.
on the streets and all that. But I don't know. I think, you know, a lot of Christians, what you just said, it seems to be kind of an insensitive position, I think, towards those people.
No. I'm very sensitive toward them, and I help them, okay? I've done much to help them. However, I am not in favor of forcing somebody to help who doesn't want to help. And that's what the welfare system is. They say, we're going to grab this money out of everybody's pocket, and we're going to redistribute it the way we think best. Socialism, the government does not know best, okay? I agree with, I'm not insensitive to homeless people or people who can't work or, you know, hurt themselves. I have given personally, and our ministry has given collectively, many tens of thousands of dollars to help people in problems like that. We helped a missionary fly to China to pick up, to adopt a Chinese baby, okay? We spent probably $6,000 on airplane tickets, okay? This is a person who couldn't afford it by himself, so we helped. We helped a missionary in Mexico to the tune of probably $30,000. So, you know, we helped lots of homeless people. And I'm not, I just pointed out, I don't think Eric got it. Some people are in that position because they will not work. Not because they cannot. They will not. Those are the ones that don't deserve to eat.
Right. And that is certainly the case in a lot of situations. But, you know, people, you know, I suppose if you would legalize abortion, a lot of these cases would just go away eventually, don't you think?
Oh, I don't know what you mean by that. Abortion's already legal in the government's term.
I mean, and that might maybe encourage it, I suppose.
Oh, encourage abortion.
Yeah.
Well, let's suppose you picked out 100 homeless people in Tucson.